Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope on Franciscans and Dominicans. At his Wednesday General Audience, Pope Benedict pays tribute to the movement of ecclesial reform in the 13th century, promoted by the orders of Saints Francis and Dominic. Ambassadors' Reflections. We continue with our reactions to Pope Benedict's wide-ranging address to diplomats this week and have exclusive interviews with the US, Australian and Canadian ambassadors to the Holy See. And Vocations Viewpoint. As the US Church celebrates Vocations Awareness this week, we discover why promotion of vocations to the priesthood and religious life is one of the bishop's current top priorities. At his Wednesday General Audience, Pope Benedict paid tribute to the movement of ecclesial reform promoted by the orders of Saints Francis and Dominic. In his continuing catechesis on medieval Christian culture, the Pope said that in every age, the saints are the true reformers of the Church's life.
In the 13th century, Saint Francis and Dominic inspired a vast evangelical renewal which met three significant needs of the Church of the time. The Franciscans and the Dominicans adopted a lifestyle of evangelical poverty, which, unlike that of the Cathars, was grounded in communion with the visible Church and a sound Christian understanding of the goodness of creation.
The Pope went on to say that by travelling freely from place to place, the Franciscan and Dominican friars also contributed to the overall renewal of Church life and the spiritual transformation of society.
May the example of holiness and evangelical lifestyle inspire our own witness to the gospel and our efforts to draw the world to Christ and his Church. Upon all of you invoke God's blessings of joy and peace.
Pope's annual and wide-ranging address to ambassadors accredited to the Holy See in January of each year is often called the Vatican's State of the World Address. The Pope uses his encounter with the diplomats to highlight his hopes and concerns regarding many pressing global issues, which are threaded in with a number of moral and spiritual questions. In this year's address, Pope Benedict said war, hunger, oppression, environmental degradation, and the current global financial crisis are all the result of selfishness and a lack of respect for the human person. Much of his speech focused on the environment, echoing his message for World Peace Day on January the 1st, which has as its theme, "If you want to cultivate peace, protect creation." A total of 178 countries have diplomatic relations with the Holy See, and we bring you today reactions to Pope Benedict's address from the ambassadors of the US, Australia and Canada, who spoke to Charles Collins. A Cuban-born professor of theology, Miguel Diaz was appointed by President Obama last May to become the US's current ambassador to the Holy See. Let's hear the interview with him.
One thing the Pope mentioned in his speech is natural disasters. Yesterday, we had an earthquake in Haiti. We know that hundreds, maybe thousands of people have been buried in the rubble. Can you give us a comment on that?
I want to begin by saying that I want to express my deep concern for the people of Haiti. As someone who grew up in Miami, I have many Haitian American friends back home. And on behalf of the United States and on behalf of our embassy, I want to send our prayers and our thoughts to the people of Haiti on this day. Clearly, this is a catastrophe, And both the President and Secretary Clinton have sent their thoughts and prayers and have pledged the support of the United States during this time when we evaluate and assess the needs of the people of Haiti. And so I wanted to start with that. And clearly this is something that is this related to the Pope's World Day Peace message and the Pope's recent message to us as ambassadors, because the care of creation and the relationship that creation has to human beings is clearly at the forefront of this Pope. And it was clearly echoed in his both the speeches. And so once again, I just want to express our deep condolences to the people of Haiti, and the thoughts and prayers of the United States are with them today.
Going back to the Pope's speech, you mentioned this care of creation. This was a theme in his speech that he went back to time and time again. When he was discussing the various problems around the world, he always brought it back to this idea of care of creation. How does the world's problems relate to the ecological crisis going on now?
I think that there are three things that the Pope underscored in the speech that are very much resonate with what the world is facing, and also in particularly I think that resonate with what President Obama and this administration is about in terms of addressing some of these concerns at the world level. I would underscore that there are three things in the speech that particularly caught my attention. The first one is that the Pope speaks about responsibility rather than authority, responsibility when it comes to creation. Clearly he's drawing from the Judeo-Christian narrative of Genesis and in the invitation there in that narrative for the human beings to care for the earth. The second thing is the theme of interdependence, that is the relationship that creation has with all human beings and the effects that destroying one has on the destruction of the other, and so that the interdependence of humanity and creation are tied, you know, the history of humanity and creation are tied together. And then the third thing I like to underscore is that even though clearly the Pope is coming from a Judeo-Christian tradition and clearly emphasizing the relationship there that creation has and the importance that creation has within the Christian narrative and its relationship to Christ, there is also the broader concern that all humanity and all religious traditions have shown in the interdependence that the various creation myths, Native Americans, other parts of the world have shown in terms of tying the fate of humanity with the fate of creation. So I think that President Obama himself has called for a new era of responsibility. I think that responsibility clearly extends to not only human beings, but to the care of all creation. He himself, you know, President Obama and this administration has committed, have made great steps and commitments to ecology and to, you know, into the care of creation. Most recently, the president himself attended Copenhagen and tried to move forward this issue. And so I think that, you know, this is the Pope's message is timely and will be embraced and should be embraced by all peoples and nations of the world.
You mentioned this, that the Pope went to Copenhagen. A lot of people are disappointed with the results from Copenhagen, a non-binding agreement that other nations agree to take note of, as opposed to even endorsing. The Holy Father says he hopes to see better results in the upcoming two conferences in 2010. Is that really going to happen?
Well, look, this is. I think we have to see this as, you know, the clearly the president has expressed that, you know, for the first time in history, all major economies came together to embrace their responsibility to take action to confront the threats of climate change. And I think that there were three things that the United States, the president, and a number of nations called for that we were able to achieve. And the three things were clearly action to mitigate, or at least begin that process of mitigating some of the effects of global warming. Certainly in terms of you know, the United States, we have committed ourselves to the 17% reduction by the year 2020. So there's the action piece. There's the transparency part, which we were able to really achieve in terms of not only do we need to have actions taken, but we need to have nations be transparent and be submitted to the kind of regulations and the kind of guidelines and ongoing checking and make sure that the nations are following through their commitments. And then finally, I think the financial piece, which clearly the United States came ready to to support, especially with respect to the poorer nations of the world. And so I think that we have to see this as a step. This is clearly not the end, and this is clearly not enough, but it is a beginning in this cooperation and in our ability as nations, and clearly from the perspective of the United States, to invite and to join in this effort that we clearly recognize is an important one at this time in history.
The Holy Father talks about, though, a economic and political resistance to, what he calls it, combating the degradation of the environment. In the last year, we've seen one of the largest financial crises to hit the world, the largest since the Depression. Some people think that this would be painful for the economy to take large steps to combat climate change, to cut carbon emissions. How much tougher is it to come to an agreement in the present economic conditions?
Well, look, I think that coming to an agreement at any time is difficult. When as the nations of the world gather, this is not just an issue that has to do with the economic crisis. Clearly, the economic crisis adds certain pressures from that may not have been there before. But I think that the economic crisis is being addressed. Clearly, from the perspective of 1 year ago, we have done tremendous strides in terms of addressing the economic crisis. And I think that ultimately the argument that needs to be put forth is that the economy itself is at risk when we don't care for the earth. Because clearly, when we're not caring for the earth, we're not caring for ourselves, and ultimately those will have economic consequences. So I think that there's interdependence of economic and ecological and human factors. We have to look at this in terms of a total picture. And I'm convinced that the President Obama is committed to advancing and moving forward. And I am convinced that what we need now is the goodwill of all nations to join in this effort to move this forward. We are not going to achieve everything overnight, but I think that the important thing is that we keep moving forward and we keep reminding ourselves that this is important for clearly not only the earth, but for future generations in terms of our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
That was the U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See, Miguel Diaz, speaking to Charles Collins. A former Deputy Prime Minister, Tim Fisher, is Australia's first resident ambassador to the Holy See and was appointed last July. He gives his reaction to the Pope's remarks.
People used to talk about a world without nuclear weapons, and now we're seeing a world where more and more countries seem to be declaring themselves nuclear powers.
It's a work-in-progress issue, but it's such a fundamentally important issue. It's one in which the Australian government set up an International Commission on Nuclear Non-Proliferation and Disarmament, which has recently reported under co-chairs Gareth Evans of Australia and Yuriko Kawaguchi from Japan. And I'm in the process of presenting that report to key interlocutors in the Holy See. So it was very timely that the Pope, in his address, said he firmly hoped that during these meetings coming up in May in New York, effective decisions will be made towards progressive disarmament with a view to freeing our planet from nuclear arms. And that's absolutely in accord with the objectives stated by Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, and I was very pleased to see that reference.
Now, isn't non-proliferation an issue that must be tackled before we can tackle disarmament itself?
Look, step by step. And the Middle East, of course, is a great focus for all of this in the hinted at but never formally quite stated situation where Israel, shortly after the Suez Crisis and the Six-Day War, elected to develop its own nuclear capability. And the most recent Prime Minister but one has spoken of that. The set of issues arising in the very delicate circumstance in the Middle East, obviously part of the focus of the Holy See going forward and following on the Pope's visit to the Middle East last year. I think the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Review Conference in May in New York is critical, and I hope that the network available to the Holy See will bring priority and focus in the build-up to that particular conference.
The Holy Father, in his speech, linked a lot of these issues to ecology, to the environment. Of course, this was the theme of his World Day of Peace message. One thing he brought up was food security. This is a concept that sometimes in the West we don't think about, but around the rest of the world, the food price fluctuations can have tremendous consequences on the population. What were your thoughts on this?
Again, this was a timely reference as I sat there in the magnificent setting, Loggia, listening to the Pope say the world has enough food for all its inhabitants, provided that selfishness does not lead some to hoard, as he said at the FAO Food Summit late last year. And there's a distributional set of problems which Australia's very much aware of, and I'm personally aware of. The last 4 years, my own wheat farm in the Riverina has had zero cropping, effectively zero wheat production, after 100 years of every year never missing on a crop. The last 4 years we have missed on a crop. So these messages resonate very directly to me, and I was again pleased to see the Pope continue to prosecute this issue in the follow-up to his attendance and opening of the FAO Food Summit. I would point, though, to some of the other organisations here in Rome which the Vatican interfaces with, such as the World Food Programme, Biodiversity International and the Crop Diversity Trust, all organisations headquartered here in Rome. And Australia is very keen to see maximum output and outcome to the activities of these organisations as the world wrestles with very real food shortages, most notably in parts of Africa.
What can these organisations do, though, to help in these areas?
We'll come up with programs which will restore some functionality with the food supply chain in places like Somalia, which goes to the very issue of modern-day piracy. The fishermen are starving. Up rocks a middleman, says, here's a bag of rice, here's a rocket launcher, here's a speedboat, go and be our frontline pirate, and we'll take the millions through to the Swiss bank accounts, and we'll give you a couple more bags of rice when you've done the job. Why are fishermen accepting these offers and becoming modern-day pirates? Because they have a total breakdown in their food supply chain. They are starving, their families are starving, and so the Church, the Holy See, but more particularly these organisations, to answer your question, Charles, are coming up with practical ways of restoring the food supply chain into some of those most troubled areas of Africa.
The Holy Father also in his speech spoke about other aspects of the change in the climate, talking about how these things can affect the world in ways people don't think sometimes, including he mentioned some of the natural disasters that are happening and some of those in your region. In Vietnam, for example, he mentioned had the typhoons that hit Vietnam and caused extensive damage. But that was not the first time he mentioned Vietnam. He also mentioned it because he met with the president of Vietnam last year. Vietnam is one of the very few countries that the Holy See does not have diplomatic relations with, yet it is becoming more and more open in the world, and there's hope that diplomatic relations will be established. What are your thoughts on the progress of Vietnam in the last
Clearly,
few years?
The Vatican has it as a very high priority. It was no accident that injected into the speech was the statement on Vietnam, where the Pope said the President of Vietnam meetings the Pope had and the Secretary of State were very significant, quote unquote. A quote, Vietnam is a country close to my heart where the Church is celebrating its centuries-long presence through a jubilee year this year. Reading through the tea leaves, if you like, it would seem that inch by millimetre some progress is being made to a form of diplomatic relations formally between the Holy See and Vietnam. The Australian government is strongly in support of freedom of religion and in support of that happening in Vietnam, in China, and in other countries where those relations are sought. And so I've just thought it was of noteworthiness that in the opening couple of minutes of the Pope's speech, Vietnam was up there front and centre, if you like.
As a final question, this is, of course, a unique opportunity for the diplomatic corps in the Holy See, not just to see the speech of the Pope, but also a chance to have personal greetings with the Pope, a chance to see all of your colleagues together. Are there any personal reminiscences from the meeting that you'd like to make?
The one takeout for me was the chance to mention to the Pope the absolute delight in Australia with the news of the sign-off of the decree on the second miracle with regard to the Blessed Mary MacKillop, Australia's first saint, to which in our one-on-one conversation the Pope said he's looking forward to an early canonisation, and that will be very well received in Australia. We expect that perhaps next month at a solemn consistory the final click-through on the canonisation will take place, and the exact date of canonisation ceremony here in Rome will be announced by the Pope, and we look forward to this. He certainly was very familiar, once I mentioned the name Blessed Mary MacKillop, a great Australian, a great pioneer in education, and it will be terrific to be ambassador during that period.
And Anne Leahy is the Canadian ambassador to the Holy See, and she talks about her reactions to the Pope's address.
Well, I think you have to be struck by the continuity in the Pope's thought, and you should go back to Caritas in Veritate that he had issued just before the G20 meetings, where he insisted on the holistic nature of creation. If you want to respect environment, you really have to start by respecting the dignity of the person from before conception, before birth, to natural death. Message on the Day of Peace was also very much geared to this holistic aspect. If you want to build peace, you have to protect creation, and that includes man. I think to the diplomatic corps, the Pope tied this to concrete events, conferences that diplomats attend to, that countries are attending, in particular, of course, Copenhagen and the follow-up meetings in 2010. He linked that to the review conference of non-proliferation, nuclear weapons, and it was rather striking for the continuity of thought that the Pope has for a safeguard of nature, but more importantly, dignity of man.
Touching on these conferences, of course, Copenhagen, many people were dissatisfied with the outcome of Copenhagen. They wanted a binding treaty. One did not come out. The Holy Father mentioned that there were economic and political resistance to tackling the issue of climate change. Do you see that changing in the next year, especially given the economic problems the world has seen over the last 12 months or so?
I certainly hope that there will be progress in Bonn and Mexico. Canada has supported the effort and the agreement that was taken note of in Copenhagen. We're really looking at questions of principles. Who is responsible for the future well-being of creation of our generations and the earth we live on? Everyone is, to perhaps varying degrees in terms of what can be done, what can be financed, but definitely everyone is concerned, and that will be, of course, an important theme early next year, and also most probably at the next meetings of the G8 and G20 that take place in Canada next June.
Of course, the Holy Father, when talking about the environment, brought up the religious principles behind his thoughts on it. But he also brought up that in the West, often there is an anti-religious and sometimes anti-Christian tendency among some of the elites, some politicians in the cultural circles, even in the media, and how this affects the people's views on the world. Do you see this happening? Is this a problem in Canada?
There is a lively debate in Canada, in particular in Quebec, on laïcité, secularity. And it is definitely a very topical issue, and the Pope is, of course, right to focus on it. It is how you define laïcité, secularity, that is at stake here. And some would have it exclude le fait religieux, exclude religion. Others would say that it refers to the proper place of the church and the state in terms of public life. So there is a lot to be debated, and it is certainly something that Canadians will take note of.
When he visited your neighbor to the south, the United States, he talked a little bit about this issue, and he talked about a positive secularism versus a negative secularism, maybe reflecting versus a North American to a European view on these issues. Do you see this aspect of it in Canada, this a positive secular attitude?
Yes, well, that's part of the debate. This positive secularity is an expression, of course, that goes back to President Sarkozy in a book in 2004. And it's interesting how the Pope has made it his own. Now he's adopted it. But a positive secularity accepts that the community of believers have something to contribute to society in terms of educating people, but also in terms of pointing to moral principles that guide the behavior, the lifestyle, the choices people make. That is a positive secularism or secularity. Some that would remove all manifestations, signs of religion in the public square, but further would confine to the private sphere, to your own home, any teachings or any principles that apply to public society, would say it's not your place to talk about them publicly, would put a definition of secularity that might be at odds with some of the greater objectives being followed, such as preserving nature.
That was Anne Leahy, the Canadian ambassador to the Holy See, talking to Charles Collins. The Catholic Church in the US is currently celebrating National Vocation Awareness Week in a bid to promote vocations through prayer and education. The bishops say they are praying for an increased number of seminarians and candidates for religious life and have earmarked this issue as one of their current top priorities. Father David Toops is the interim executive director of the Secretariat of Clergy, Consecrated Life and Vocations for the US Catholic Church, and he spoke to Kelsey Brennan Wessels about why promoting vocations is such a top priority.
Well, I think vocations in the life of the church, vocations specifically to priesthood and to consecrated life, are always a priority of the church, going all the way back to the time of Christ, if you will, when he said, "Beg the master of the harvest to send laborers into the vineyard." So even going back 2,000 years, Jesus made it a priority that this is something that not only the church needs, but that we must pray for, and the life of the church hinges on it. That being said, the bishops, as you mentioned, have made it one of their top five priorities, the promotion of vocations to priesthood and consecrated life, because we do need more priests and religious men and women in the life of the church. Specifically, this is the year for priests, and as we know, there is no Eucharist without the priesthood. And so, as John Paul and Benedict have both said, there is no church without the priesthood. So it's essential to the life of the church. We've been blessed in the last number of years. We've seen about a 2% increase in the number of seminarians and ordinations every year. So we certainly are moving in the right direction, and the Lord will always provide for his church. It falls on to us to do our part, and that is to pray and also to encourage, to build a climate of vocations, a culture of vocations, as we like to say in our business.
Now, in the process of building this this climate, this culture of vocations, what difficulties do you face?
Well, I think certainly one of the difficulties is the family, the home. Back in, let's say, the 40s or 50s, a couple of things. One, we had larger Catholic families. And when you have larger families, I think people are more apt to say, well, here's the doctor, here's the lawyer, here's the priest. You know, there was maybe a more of an openness because of the numbers. When you have maybe one boy in a family, in a home, maybe a girl and a boy, parents, somehow there's this reticence to say, well, but I want grandchildren and I want our name to continue. And so sometimes there's this, if you will, stinginess, spiritual stinginess within parents. And so they say, well, we need priests, but I'm not going to promote it with my child because I want grandchildren. When in essence, as a Catholic family, we have to recognize the eternal value of what it is to actually create, if you will, a spiritual father whose family goes far beyond bloodlines and the reaches of which affect hundreds of thousands of people. So really, one of our targets is really the home, helping our families to become the best Catholic families they can be. I think when you find a family that is really devout, there is an openness to their children, the possibility of becoming a priest or a religious sister. So the number one target is the family. I grew up in a home that was certainly one that you could consider a healthy Catholic home where we prayed together as a family, where we never missed a Sunday Mass. But I would say my parents never pushed the idea of a vocation to the priesthood for myself. I'm a priest now of 13 years. But priesthood was always on the table as a valid option.
That was Father David Toops, Director of Vocations. Well, that's all from Vatican Radio's English program for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. Laudato Jesus Christus.